for joining us. We've got a pretty good topic today. And Michael, I know you've worked for Tony Robbins in the past. You might have heard him say this, but I've also heard some of the other success gurus say one thing. Success is about doing what the unsuccessful people do not do. And I thought about this a lot over the years, and I'm like, it's particularly as it relates to GovCon, I wanted to really take a moment to talk about some of the things that the successful people in government contracting does that maybe those other folks are not doing yet, and maybe provide some tips around that. So, because a lot of people, I think they don't even realize it's like, hey, I'm not working on this thing in my business, and this is of critical importance to be successful. So I've got a list of three things. I want to go to you first. And with the list that I do, I also want to back that up by a case study that's going to be very relevant to what I'm going to share with one of our most successful students here at Govology. And by the way, for those of you guys who are tuning in, Michael and I do this unscripted, so we don't compare notes beforehand. So you might hear some of the same things that Michael and I will mention. If it is, it's because it's a core principle, and you might hear some different things. So Michael, I'll give you the first go at it. If you have your maybe top 2 to 3 things or maybe more that you want to share about what you see that some people are not doing that some of your successful clients are doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I made a list. My list has 7 things on it.
Oh, awesome.
You know, back to Tony Robbins for a minute, the famous quote that he always says is success leaves clues. That's the one he says all the time. And those clues are very simple things usually. And I'll rattle off my 7 here, and then we can either flip it over and talk about yours or talk a little bit about mine. But the number one thing that I see successful companies doing is actually putting together a strategy. And I know that may sound oversimplistic, but I can't tell you how often I sit down with somebody and their strategy is, we want to win government contracts. I'm like, that's not a strategy. You know, that's a goal, but that's not a strategy. So having a strategy, number one. Number two is they niche their business on either a product or service and a customer. So it's not just one thing. There's 2 things, their product or service and their customer. They niche on that. The third one is they hire really well. So their recruiting process, their recruiting pool of people, they do really well at hiring, because a bad hire can set you back months, if not years, and cost a whole lot of money. Number four is they spend about 80% of their BD efforts on relationships and pre-acquisition versus the other side of the coin where most people are spending the majority of their time focusing on stuff that's already in acquisition. And that's usually a waste of time. Number five is they leverage teaming partners. Number six is they're always filling their pipeline. So when I talk to them, what are you putting in the pipeline this week, today, whatever it may be, they're always filling that pipeline. And then number seven is they understand that this is a marathon and they don't make hasty decisions. Because when you are running a government contracting business, things are a lot slower. The pace is just very different than a commercial business. And if you're constantly shifting left to right, you're going to find yourself 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road, constantly shifting and not winning anything and starting your strategy from scratch every single time. So understanding that this is a marathon and staying the course is really, really important. So those are my 7 out of the gate that I see that the most successful companies are doing.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to add one more. So I'm going to have 4 things to share. When I share these 4 things, they're all within the categories of the things that you talked about. I want to talk about those. The first one is foundation, really. And you've talked about those in your 7. And when I wrote it down, specifically, for example, like having the niche and being able to dominate and being the best that you can be in that niche, regardless of the fact that there are sole source and set aside contracts for small businesses, there are other pretty good businesses that are out there competing. So I see a lot of people coming in maybe thinking that the certifications and the sole source contracts are going to be their key to success, but without really owning that space and just really being super awesome at what they do, it's still going to be hard even with those certifications and the sole source contracts. And to me, that goes back to just core foundation right there, good, solid business foundation. The other thing you mentioned was the filling of the pipeline. I think that that also goes back to some of the foundation, really having a good sales process, a good workable process that you can also maybe tweak even what works for you outside of the government a little bit going inside of the government. I tell people this a lot, and I think they miss out on the good old sales and marketing 101 and think that like government is some kind of different thing that they need to do. But really, the only thing that is different in the government is the location in which the government is buying, maybe some of those contract vehicles. So you need to understand those, the compliance that you've got to meet. And then outside of that, just generally the paperwork of doing the proposal. If you look at any sales process, it's like those are probably about the only three things that kind of differ. And I think what happens sometimes within GovCon is that people kind of start to go down this other row where they think, hey, I got to do things all just completely different way. But I think that you just need to really, number one, have that good sales and marketing process that works for you on the outside and look at how you need to adapt that process to account for those three things that we just mentioned. So that was the one thing, Michael, that you mentioned a few things on with the foundation. The other thing you mentioned was putting together the strategy. I think some of that comes from the education. I think education is super important in this marketplace and not enough people do it. If I look at any population, unless people are really like promoting education, there's only about maybe 3 to 5% of the people that will take the time to get educated. So for those of you who have joined this session, congratulations, because you're already in that top group, and just keep doing that, because really in this marketplace, knowledge truly is power. I mean, being able to understand how some of these regulations work, how they allow you to do things that other businesses can't do. You talked about teaming. I'm not going to get into the whole exemption for affiliation and the mentor-protege program and everything like that. But I will talk about the case study where one of our most successful students in Govology has leveraged education. You also talked about relationships. So key. And you talked about those in the context of pre-acquisition, but also the relationships you have with others that can help you along the way. The experts, the attorneys, the accountants, the coaches, the consultants, the Apex centers, and the others that are out there to help you out. Leverage everybody that you can. Surround yourself with this team. And that's another key that not enough people truly do enough of that. And then the last thing I will say is that not enough people are really willing to make the investment into their business and spend the money that they need to do. They try to do the DIY approach. DIY government contracting is tough, if not impossible in some regards, especially when you're looking at the big contracts. You might be able to get some small stuff, but when it comes to the big stuff that people want to win, it's hard. And be willing to invest. You know, we just earlier this year pursued like a $3 million grant opportunity, and we spent probably about $20,000 on that in consultants and people that can help to review our proposals, be a part of massaging the content. We had to get our GovCon accounting system in place for a cost-based type of a grant. And so we invested a lot into it. So we went all in. And that's another thing. I think people don't go all in. And sometimes people can't go that much all in. But we've been in this marketplace now for over 10 years. So over that period of time, you can save some money for the time that you're going to need it. You can make the smart investments when you can. And don't make the wrong investments. And that's one thing that I see a lot of new people coming in, say, hey, I'm going to hire this person to help me get on SAM, get on a GSA contract. But without doing the market research and maybe even having a strategy first, there's a lot of people who will take your money and leave you with nothing. And so making the wrong investments is just as bad as not making an investment, and absolutely, maybe worse. So those are the three things that I want to touch on, Michael. And I want to share the case study on how this specifically applies to one of our most successful Govology students, who I'm going to call JB for right now. We're going to bring JB on, have him on probably in a future episode. And we're also having some training that we're looking at doing with this person, so that not only can you get some good guidance inside of your education from us, but we also gone after government contracts ourselves. And we also bring in experienced people. But I'll take a pause before I share that story, Michael, to see if you have any thoughts or comments on those three particular areas that I just shared.
Yeah, I think one of the really important ones, which ties into strategy and making the wrong investments, is really sitting back and figuring out where are you going to focus? What are you going to do? Because a lot of times what I see in the market is somebody will come to me who's been in the business for 1-2 years, and they've done a lot of things, and they are emotionally attached to the things they've done. Like they've went and got a GSA schedule, they went and got a certain certification or whatever it may be. And then when we sit down and do the market research that you were talking about, I'm very quick to say, hey, based on where you want to focus, those things are irrelevant. They're not going to help you. But they're so caught up emotionally in, well, I spent the time to go get the schedule, the certification, the whatever, that they don't want to shift or pivot and focus on what's actually going to work. And I'm like, well, I know you're emotionally invested in that, but your customer's not buying that way. Or your customer is spending a lot of dollars in the WSB category and not the SDVSB category, or whatever the thing may be, right? And so I think that's one of the reasons why it's so important to have the strategy, the market research you talked about, all those things up front, because it's not just about, to me, the money investment, it's the time investment. Because a lot of times when people are going down a path, like say the GSA schedule, you're talking months, if not a year, sometimes to get something like that. Or if it's a certification, in a perfect world, you could get any certification in a matter of 60, 90 days, but it's not a perfect world. So you start going down the path, you take a break from doing the paperwork, you catch up with it in a month or two and you re-engage it, but you're kind of hoping that that certification is going to really make the difference for you. And now you've wasted 6 months, you've wasted 9 months on whatever that thing is. So you've wasted money, you've wasted time, and you're not any further than you are. So to me, that's one of those reasons why the strategy, the market research, all those things are so important, because you don't have 9 months to waste. At least the average business doesn't. Regardless of whether it's you, a one-person company, or 10 people, and now you've got a lot of payroll, you don't have the time to waste. So getting in, getting the education that you talked about as quickly as possible so you can get up to speed faster is just essential in this market, given how slow the market does everything. I mean, people joke about government employees all the time about how slow they are and how slow the business is. It's true. It's true, right? The market's really slow at how it moves. And so anything you can do on your own outside of the government to accelerate yourself, the faster you're going to grow in this market. You know, whether it's sitting and watching a Govology webinar every single night, Federal Access in the morning, whatever it may be, listening to these podcasts, all those things are going to accelerate you in the market. I can't be a bigger champion for the education side than what we are. It's so important.
And it's all connected in my mind, because education will lead to things just like what folks are learning on the session today, how to build the networks, how to go to the places where the folks are. So education gives you all of the how-to. But the second thing I'll say also about the education, because like you can come in here and you can do the Govology webinars or on demand once a day. You can also jump into the Federal Access platform and do all of that. But until you start actually applying what you're learning, and your partner says this all the time, it's not just about what you learn, but it's also about how you apply it. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot, there's another segment. So if you said like, hey, out of 100 people, 5 will actually come in and do the education, which puts them into a different group, but maybe only 1% actually really take it to heart and apply and really trust it. And I think what happens is people see it's like, hey, this is going to take work, and they don't want to really put that in. They want to find the shortcut, but there's no shortcuts in GovCon. I mean, you talk about the long game all the time. And another something that Jim Rohn says is like, you can't go from the 5th grade to the 10th grade. It takes time. Right. Yeah. So go through your process, go through your steps and give it time.
And I'll tack one more thing on there. Everybody that's on here has probably heard the statistics on the failure rate of small businesses. Like the failure rate of small businesses is like off the charts. I know they say like 80% of all small businesses will fail in the first 3 years. I think that number is actually higher based on how much I've interacted with small businesses. However, there was a study done. I can't remember who did the study. It was years ago, and I'd read this and it blew my mind, that you will half the failure rate if you just do like one training course a year. And I think part of that is just showing the fact that you're willing to educate yourself. You are halving that failure rate. So you go from 80% to maybe only a 40% chance that you fail by doing that. And so the people that educate themselves have a much better chance of success because they know these things about the business and they can kind of sharpen their sword, so to speak. And it doesn't take much. I think that's the thing for me is we're not talking about resetting your entire mindset, resetting how you do everything in your business. Oftentimes, it's a small little tweak. You know, you could sit in a 2-hour workshop and walk away with one little nugget that changes how you do sales, or changes how you position your company, or changes your thought process on how you find teaming partners and work with them. And that one little nugget is the difference between success and failure for you. And so, again, that's why I'm such a huge advocate of sitting in on these trainings, asking questions. It's one thing to sit and just listen. It's another thing to interact. When you're asking questions, which I get questions on LinkedIn every single day. I get them in my inbox every single day on all the other platforms. And these people are just asking questions on, hey, I'm doing this, but I think I'm making a mistake. Can you help guide me left or right 5 or 10%? And that 5 or 10% is often what makes the difference. So it's really little things that wind up producing really big results for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And I want to share this case study with one of our most successful students. And remember, we talked about four things at the beginning: foundation, education, relationships. And we also talked about that expert guidance, but we also talked about the action part too. So that maybe is five things.
Like
I
12.
Want to share this story all the way through from start to beginning, because you will see these things play out in this contractor's journey. And the reason why we're here, just like promoting the education. And, you know, Michael, I'm almost hesitant sometimes to kind of say educate, because it's like, of course, I have a vested interest in having people educate. You know, I have an education business. But the reality of it is that we have these businesses because they produce results for people. Mm-hmm. And I think that I don't do a good enough job sometimes of like advocating for education. But let me share this story with you. So in 2018, we did a masterclass, teaming mentor on joint ventures and mentor protege. You talked about one of your seven things being teaming. And we see some phenomenal things happen in the government marketplace in that realm of teaming. And actually your partner, Josh Frank, was one of our educators that we did. It was like about a 9-week cohort type of program. It wasn't free. It was about $2,000. And we only really had a handful of people that invested in that course. So number one, they didn't want to invest in the training. But one person that came in did go through that training. And not only did they engage in basically watch every session that we did, but they went out and applied what we taught. And when they did that, within about the first year, so one of the things that they did have going for them, what I would say is that they had a really strong leader with a good mindset, and they had foundation in their business. They were an established company, but they were still a small disadvantaged business, small native-owned firm out of the state of Arkansas. And they were actually working with their PTAC, now Apex Accelerator. And in fact, I think that their Apex Accelerator is one of the key that turned them on to this particular session that we were doing. But anyway, they came in and they made the investment. They took the training and they applied it. So this small disadvantaged business within the first year managed to go out and win a $3 million contract with the Army Corps of Engineers with a teaming partner. That's one of the hardest agencies to do business with, by the way, Army Corps of Engineers. I wouldn't wish that on anybody as your first contract. But he had a very strong teaming partner who was supporting him throughout the contract, not only to get the past performance and experience required to do business with that agency, but to help with the technical sides of things, some of the proposal stuff. There's so much that a good teaming partner can do for you if you want to go after those bigger contracts. Now, again, even though he was eligible as an SDB to get into the 8A program, that was before he even got into the 8A program. After he got into the 8A program, for the last 5 years, he's just killing it, to say the least. Over the last 6 months, he's been winning IDIQ contracts that are in the $1 to $2 billion range, with task orders that are ranging from like $20 million to $80 million a piece. Mm-hmm. And nice. He's in the SBA's Mentor Protege program. He's got two joint ventures. And he really did everything that is designed to do, which a lot of people don't do. You know, a lot of people, first of all, don't make the investment, right, into the class that he invested in. Sometimes when they do, we had some people that made the investment, but they didn't take the class. We had people that took the class, but they didn't take the action. And so when you put those three things together, you kind of can start to break down and see the components of a successful contractor. And you can either really follow that path. As you said earlier, success leaves clues. Follow the path. And this is what he did. And man, the sky's the limit right now. We're so excited for him and his business and any partners that he's involved with, because they're all doing very well. And so that's just one example. I know you have your own examples, Michael, of this. But again, I just can't emphasize enough. Education is the starting point. Relationships. He surrounded himself with experts. So he went out there and he hit the ground. He was at all the conferences that he needed to be at, not only at the conferences, but also spending the extra time after hours, which sometimes that's when the best networking is made. People are out having a beer or whatever. And that's when some of the true secrets kind of come out and the true relationships are made. Anyway, again, it's just phenomenal to see that kind of success by a small disadvantaged business winning billion-dollar contracts.
Yeah, it's available to everybody. I mean, it really is. It's just a matter of putting the pieces together and executing on it. And the one thing that we really haven't talked about that I think is a challenge for a lot of people is when they get in this market, there's not a lot of confidence. In fact, there's a lot of questions. There's a lot of intimidation. You're working with the government. It can be kind of scary looking at it. And as you educate yourself, as you take some of those steps, you start to build a lot of confidence and it just starts to stack on. And as you go, you realize, hey, this isn't that scary. It's not that hard. And once you have a groove, you know, you have a system in place, it's a lot of rinse and repeat just doing the same thing. Even if you want to go to a new agency or if you want to introduce a new product or a new service line, it's a lot of rinse and repeat of doing the exact same things, just changing who you're talking to or pitching to or whatever it may be. But you don't develop that confidence without the education piece and without the execution piece. Those two come together because you can feel really confident, but then you can be timid about taking those steps. I still have people today who are running multi-million dollar businesses that say, Mike, is it okay to call a contracting officer? Is it okay to, I'm like, yeah, it's okay to call these people or, you know, how many times can I email them before I get on their nerves? You know, I've emailed them once. They're like, well, you got plenty more to go, right? Because they're still timid about being in this market. And so again, the education plus the experience from execution helps eliminate a lot of those hurdles. And you learn a lot from just executing. Even if you sat in that workshop that you were talking about and you executed flawless, you're going to come up against barriers. You're going to come up against challenges that probably weren't covered in the course because they're one-offs or whatever they may be. And the only way to go over those barriers is to face them, to be out there executing. And you're not going to learn that by sitting at home and thinking about this stuff. Like you got to be doing it. I think one of my other, I know this is like quote day or something. Like the other quote that I hear all the time is you'll never learn how to ride a bike in a workshop, right? Like you've actually got to go get on the bike. You're not just going to learn from some slides how to do it. You got to feel the handlebars and the pedals and the seat and air. You got to do it. And doing it creates just so many good things, so much good momentum in your business that you learn and grow from.
Yeah, you got it, man. And just like a bike, some of the best lessons are learned when you fall down of what not to do, you know?
That's right.
So it's just like you get out there, you get the education gives you some guidance. But yeah, I mean, it would be like, hey, here's a training on how to ride a bike. Here's a guide on how to ride a bike. But until you get out there and do it and fall on your face and scuff your knees, that education, that experience is just so invaluable. That's the best. That's the best.
But it's really priceless.
Yeah. In order to get there, you got to know what a pedal is. Right. A little bit. You got to have a little bit of initial guidance. And so that's what Michael and I are here, advocating for inside of this really today. And so, Michael, I think that that's pretty much straight and to the point. And let's just kind of leave the training session here today, or our session here today, with a few how-tos. So if this resonates with anyone, really, how do you go out and get the education? How do you build the relationships and how do you make the right investments? And so I've got a few tips on that, but I'll let you go first on that, and then we'll take some Q&A.
Sure. Would it be crazy if my first how-to was you sign up for Govology and Federal Access? I think that's a great starting point, is you go through there and you start by going through the education material that's right at your fingertips. It doesn't cost a lot of, the investment in either one is really small. I don't want to sound like an infomercial or anything like that, but the investment there is really, really small. So that's a great starting point for a lot of folks. And the other how-to that I would put out there is start asking questions of the experts. If you're not asking questions of the experts, like myself, like Carol, like Josh, like anybody else that's one of the faculty from Govology, you're missing out if you're not asking questions, because those questions are going to lead to them giving you some directions that are usually simple things that you can implement. So I don't want to go down a whole list, because I'm sure you've got some, but those are probably my first two. Get signed up on these platforms if you're not already, and start asking experts questions. And that's going to lead to a lot of really good things for your business. So,
yeah, that would be my first one as well in terms of the education. You know, leverage both platforms. We have some things that are similar, but we have things that are also different. And so go and take a look at what resources that you can get there. If you're brand new into the government marketplace, on the Govology website, you go to training on the tab up there and drop down and go to Government Market Fundamentals. We have 12 or 13 trainings that are designed in a logical order to kind of help to get you some of the base knowledge that you need. Then once you get that base knowledge, then you're going to understand that as you go on your journey, and if there was any roadmap that I could actually ever give somebody, I thought it was impossible to do a roadmap, but I think I figured it out. It's that you go out, you learn, you apply, you fail, and you repeat, over again. That's how you go down the road. That's how people find their success in government marketplace, but if you're not doing those things, you're not going to be successful. And the other way I would recommend using the platforms is that know what content is on it. We have a whole on-demand library. We've got about close to 150 trainings now. I know you guys have a lot as well. Go to the on-demand on Govology and see what topics that we've got. So, for example, if you come across like, hey, I'm going to need to understand GovCon accounting, or this next contract that I want to go after, or cybersecurity is something that I know I'm going to have to get with the program on, go to the on-demand directory at Govology. Look for those topics. Get the training. There's another thing I want to make mention of here, too, is this. I think a lot of people are missing this benefit on the Govology training, and I know for you guys as well, but we've got all kinds of different experts that are presenters that we take great care into making sure that not only are they good presenters, but they're also good experts that you can rely on if you need to go somewhere. So the thing that I'm going to say about this is that when I went for that $3 million grant earlier this year, all of the experts that I engaged were people, except for one, but all of the experts were people that were on the Govology platform. And I hired them to help us out in proposal development, inside of accounting stuff. And this is the other benefit. As you listen to these gurus, and these experts that are out there on our platform and on RSMs as well, if you need to engage them, they're there. We also have a directory. So another resource that I was going to mention, and this kind of gets into that getting the experts on your team, is to go to our directory. We have a directory. We're going to be doing a big revamp of that directory in quarter three. But again, if you go under the resources area of Govology and Trusted Experts, there's our directory. So if you're looking for attorneys, by the way, every GovCon person should have a GovCon attorney, because sooner or later, you're going to need them in this marketplace, even if it's to answer a quick question for you real quick, because again, compliance is key here. And these are the compliance folks, along with the accountants and some of the CMMC experts and others. But you want these experts in your court. You want to leverage your Apex accelerators and your MBDAs if they have specialty area for federal procurement and others. But that's just one of the how-tos for education that I would recommend. And then just work on a weekly basis to continue to educate yourself. But what you're going to find is that as you get down the road in your journey, you're going to need different education at different times. That's one of the reasons why we built this huge on-demand library, so that when you get to that point, there's going to be a class that we're going to have available for you. And if you don't find it, reach out to us, right? Get in touch with us. Anything else on that, Michael, that I'm leaving off?
No, I think you hit everything, but I'm going to throw one more thing out there and then we'll go to Q&A here, I think. Be careful who you take advice from. I know we sort of touched on this earlier, but make sure that when you're taking advice from people, they've actually done the things you're wanting to do. Again, I see so often where somebody will come to me and say, I need to get a GSA schedule because my cousin said I need one. Well, is your cousin in government contracting? Well, no. Then why are you listening to your cousin?
Person called you on the telephone, yeah. Cold call told you,
yeah.
You need.
Yeah, but a lot of times it's somebody close to us or an adjacent friend or somebody giving you advice. They're not a business owner. They're not in government contracting. Why are you listening to them? Like, you can't do that. And I see that happen all the time to people, and it just takes you down the wrong road. There's a lot of good tools in the government contracting toolbox, but you need to know when to apply each tool. And if you're listening to people who've not done it, you're going to go down the wrong path. So just be aware of that. And you can just ask a simple question. Oh, are you a government contractor? Oh, are you winning contracts? You know, there's some simple things, because I've had other people that, oh yeah, I'm a government contractor. And okay, well, how much did you win last year? We won 150,000 in contracts. Yeah, I don't want to be like you. I want to talk to the guy or the gal who's doing millions in contracts, and I want to follow their model, not you who's just trying to figure it out. It's just me. You can learn something from everybody, but I see a lot of people who are struggling in the market, and they're often the first people to give advice, and it's usually advice they're not even following. So just a pet peeve of mine that I wanted to throw out there the last minute there. So you ready for some questions?
I'll say one last thing on that, just to kind of like give a case study to your point. And this is another area where people kind of go down into the weeds, I think. But I had another student slash client that was actually in the same program. And I don't want to name any names here, but somebody told them to go out. They were already a minority-owned 8A certified business. Somebody said to the wife of the firm that you need to go out and have a WOSB business. So they were looking at setting up this different business, getting a different certification, and I advised against it because I said, you're going to do a lot of work. It's going to be two entities you're going to have to maintain. Mm-hmm. And there's ways that probably compliance-wise, if you know the rules, it's not going to work out for you anyway, because you're going to be affiliated with your other company, which is not a WOSB, and then you're going to get protested. But they went that direction anyway, and I think that was maybe a waste of time. And again, they were advised by somebody that was not probably an expert in the industry. They just thought that, like, hey, there's a lot of things going on for WOSBs right now. You guys should get that certification.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, there's a lot of backup that I know Michael and I can probably sit here sharing all day stories like this. But I just wanted to share a couple of them to back up that what we're seeing is real.
And it comes from. I have one I could add to it as well that's real quick. Yeah. I was on a call yesterday and there was two guys on the call and they said, we're WSB. And this is a question I ask all the time. I said, well, where's the W?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, well, she doesn't really participate in the business anymore. She's kind of retired. I'm like, then you're not a WSB. You can't be claiming this just because she started it and now she's on the beach sipping Mai Tais all the time. It was the guy's mom. And I'm like, you're not a WSB anymore. Yeah. You're not going to pass that sniff test. So
I've seen that so many times. And I know that sometimes we have our APEC centers that attend these as well. And I know they can relate to this. It's like there's always this idea of like get the certification and that's key to success here. But it's not. It's all of the things that we mentioned, foundation, education, relationships, and action. That's it. Pretty much summed up.
So, yeah, now I think we're ready for questions now.
Yeah, so
our soapbox is out of the way.
With that, let's take some questions. And there's two ways that you can do the questions. If you want to raise your hand, we can have you unmute your mic and ask your question, or you can put them in the chat box there. So let's get to some questions. And I know, Michael, you're probably already looking at them over there. Do you see anything popping up in the chat box, or did we cover everything?
I think we covered it pretty well. I see a hand that just went up. So,
all right. I'll just unmute your mic, AC.
Yes. How you guys doing?
Good. How
great,
are you?
How are you doing?
Blessed, man. Thanks for the information. Appreciate it. I had a question. So would you consider public works government contractor?
Yes.
That is government contractor?
I'll tell you what I consider government. I use a term called the government marketplace a lot. I consider the government marketplace any funded project where the source of funding comes from the government. And that can actually be
the taxpayer dollars, yeah.
Or public works like your city, your locals, your boards, school districts. Those are all government agencies. And actually, there is a lot. We didn't get into it, but I mean, right now, there was the $1.5 trillion infrastructure bill. And a lot of the federal dollars are trickling into the state and local agencies, public works, right? There are a lot of opportunities on that end as well. So when you look at the government marketplace, as I define it, look at that bigger ecosystem where you do have the federal, but also on the state and local side and public works. I mean, you've got like 90,000 agencies out there. And so engage and remember what we said at the beginning. If you don't have a sales process defined already or a good defined product or service, that goes back to foundation. I think that's step one. If you don't have that, it's going to be hard for you to do any business with anybody, really. Have a good, solid product or service that you're really good at, and then have a solid process for selling that product or service. Then when you're looking at government, remember that typically the only variants are in three areas, which is compliance, the paperwork, and where they're purchasing it from. So if you need to maybe get onto a specific contract vehicle or team up with somebody that's already on that vehicle, that's about the only three variants. I don't know, Michael, do you know of any other variants to the sales process?
Yeah, I mean, the only other thing is like if you're doing traditional sales, you can literally show up with a contract and try to get somebody to sign it. Sometimes in some cases, it's not going to happen in the government, right? So that's not going to be there. So going through some of those sales courses where you're taught on how to look at their objections and overcome them and get them to sign on the line, that's not really going to help you a whole lot in these situations. So that's one exception. What I would say though, AC, is what you're talking about when you get into public works and things like that, you're talking the SLED market. So state, local, and education market. And it does operate slightly different than the Fed market. Not a ton of differences, but each state has its own set of politics. Each municipality has its own set of politics and how they do things, preferred contractors, systems you'll register in, things like that. And so you're talking the SLED market when you're doing public works, which is a little bit different. And there's different tools and resources online that I would recommend if you're going to focus primarily in the SLED market. I primarily focus in the Fed market just because I find it easier to understand all of the agencies and how they work and their budgeting systems. And I like the simplicity of just a few systems to log into to track opportunities and things like that. So it's a little bit different from that perspective. But other than that, it's fairly similar on how you're going to position the RFP process and all of those kind of things. The credit you're going to get for having different socioeconomic statuses are different on how the states are set up. So I'm not too familiar with every single one that's out there. Again, that's why I tend to stick in the Fed lane versus the SLED lane. I just find it more simplistic, if you will, to do that. But you can start in one and cross over into the other. So just because you start as a SLED contractor doesn't mean you can't eventually get into the federal market. In fact, a lot of people that we work with are in both. So it's just a matter of where you start and where you finish, basically.
Yeah, and I would encourage you to explore both realms. And I will also say something about the Gemology training that we do is that we do have a lot of federal things on the platform, but in a lot of instances when we can and when it's relevant, we try to make it general enough so that we try to focus on a lot of the core principles. So like if you go through our Government Market Fundamentals series, a lot of the things like prospecting and like marketing and like some of the things that you're going to learn, you can also apply across the board to the government marketplace, state and local side. Like Michael said, like the certifications are different. There are some differences. And when those are the case, we say, hey, go and research what is relevant for you in your state, because we don't do training on every state. Your Apex Accelerator, if you guys don't know what those are, it's a DOD funded program, and there's one in each state. And those guys are really good at helping you understand the local environment as well. So the website to get there is aptac-us.org, formerly known as PTAX. Definitely encourage you to go out and connect with them.
We have another question from Priscilla, and it's to get in the door pre-solicitation, who are we targeting for contacts? I'll jump on that one first. The main two people that I'm looking for are always contracting officers and program managers. Those are two of the ones. You can also target the small business reps. So every agency's got a small business rep. By the way, large primes have small business reps as well. So if you're trying to team with large primes and you don't know who to contact, they have a small business rep usually that you can reach out to who knows all the PMs that are managing different contracts and things like that. So those are the main people that you're going to want to target for almost any product or service. Depending on what you sell, if there's a grassroots level type of thing, you may target some different people, but generally it's contracting officers, PMs, small business reps. Those are the main three that I tend to focus on.
Michael, talk a little bit also about like some of the pre-acquisition work, because I know that we talk about that a lot, and I think that it's not really taught a lot. And I think that's why a lot of people, they get into this process. So if you were going to a government website or on YouTube or something, by the way, YouTube is not the best place for education for a number of reasons, and I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the pre-acquisition, somebody might say, well, Carol, you know, okay, sales 101, marketing, okay, I get it, but what about process for proposals and all of that? Again, I call that the paperwork process, but what we have seen successful contractors do, and we should emphasize this point, Michael, that unsuccessful contractors don't do, is the pre-acquisition work. Getting out there and just like you was mentioning, like having conversations with program managers or people in the agency about what you do. And in some instances, you might actually be able to get a contract without competition if it falls into one of the categories that allows for an exception for competition, or if it's under maybe a certain dollar threshold where they don't even publicize it or require competition. I recently did a training that some folks might be interested in on how to get your foot in the door with micro offers. They can find that in the Gemology database. But there's a lot of business that happens without going through the formal solicitation process. But even when it does go through a formal solicitation process, if you have managed to have conversations to understand your client, to understand their unique goals and challenges that they're facing, and maybe even craft something even beforehand, those contractors are always more successful in winning than the ones that are basically just doing the standard things like registering in SAM, watch your email, get the certifications, and try to basically blindly put in a proposal once it hits SAM, or if you have a bid notification system and you've done no pre-acquisition work, you're going to be at a severe disadvantage.
And one of the things that I love about government contracting over traditional sales is all of the data is free and at your fingertips. Like, you can't look up in a database and see all the contracts that Apple or IBM or some other big company, you can't see all the contracts they've awarded for all the different products and services. There's no database to go look in. Whereas with the government, you can literally go in a database, search by keyword, you can search by NAICS code, PSC code, whatever it may be, and see who's buying what you sell. And then you can just start going down the rabbit hole. And when I talk about going down the rabbit hole, it's saying, okay, we're going to target this particular agency. So I'm going to go look for their forecast. Then once I go and pull their forecast and go through their forecast, I may even pull up the president's budget and look through that and comb through that and start pulling out all these data points to figure out how I'm going to build the strategy, who I'm going to target. And when you are using SAM.gov, you can drill down and look at it from a contracting officer perspective, because depending on what agency it is, other than like the State Department and a few others, they literally list the names of the contracting officers who have prepared and approved those contracts. It's there. So you can sit there and say, well, out of the six contracting officers at Department of Army, these are the three that I need to target because they're the ones buying the most of my service. And now I can go look and say, well, out of the contracts they've awarded over the last 2-3 years, you know, how much did they favor WSBs versus 8As versus whatever? How much of it was open versus 2 or 3 bids? Different things like that. You can go and just research it to the nth degree because it's publicly available and free. And that's the part of pre-acquisition that most people miss out on. And then the next thing about the pre-acquisition they miss out on is a lot of people skip just going and reviewing their website. You know, just going in a simple review of the website, a simple review of the social media of the people that you are now targeting and seeing what are they talking about, what issues are hot to them, starting to interact and build a relationship with them before you make the first phone call. Those are all things you can do before you send an email, before you make a phone call, before you even put together a briefing to go and talk to a CO about. So there's a lot of work you can do. And I've just mentioned a handful of those things. There's almost no limit to what pre-acquisition stuff you can do. One of the other ones I'll mention real quick is going to industry days, going to conferences. A lot of these people go to those places. So you can go there and talk to those, talking to teaming partners, talking to employees that you have on site about what's going on and gathering information from them. Again, there's almost no limit to all the pre-acquisition stuff that you can do. So that by the time you show up on a phone call with a contracting officer or in a capabilities brief with a contracting officer, you look and sound like you know what you're talking about. And that's probably one of the biggest differences between people who win and people who lose is people who win show up prepared. They know the agency. They know the hot buttons. They know what's on their radar and they can talk to it. The people that lose show up and say, hey, I sell ABC product. We're an SDVOSB. And man, if you've got some contracts, I'd sure love you to send a few of those my way. That's how it happens a lot of times for a lot of folks is they show up like that and the government just goes, next, you know, let me talk to the next person and see if they know us any better than that last Yahoo that was in here. Because that's how they look at it. Like, this person's totally unprepared. And it frustrates the government because all this information is publicly available. It's all at your fingertips. But most people don't know it, so they don't use it. That's my last soapbox, Carol.
I'm glad you mentioned that because, I mean, I'm a big advocate on market research. And again, that's part of the education you can learn. We do have a good course on how to do what Michael was just talking about. And also, if you go to our on-demand library, you can find another great course on that same subject by Josh Frank, Michael's partner, called Who Buys What You Sell. Just go to our on-demand library and click Who Buys. And pull that course up and take it along with my course. I think with those two, that's a critical skill set, Michael, and we'll kind of leave it at that. But I use it all the time for my own business, and it's just so much intel that you can get from that. As a new concrete contractor, we notice we need to become a subcontractor under the large contractors. How do you recommend we reach out to build these connections / teaming partners? So that's a great question. And it goes back to, again, the relationships piece that we were talking about. By the way, I will tell you, as a concrete contractor, the sky is the limit, I believe, in the next 5 to 10 years for you guys if you're doing the right things, because there's going to be a lot of concrete used in the $1.5 billion infrastructure opportunities. So what I would encourage you to do, one, is go back and just what we were talking about. Look at that market research course that I mentioned that's on the in the Gobology series. Watch that. If you aren't already talking with your Apex Accelerator talk with them to get some pointers and maybe some tips on the contractors in the area that they know of. And maybe they can even provide you a direct introduction to some of them. And you're going to want to get it in, registered in their systems. All of the big contractors, just like the government, typically have their registration systems for their vendors because they need to make sure that you guys have some basic things to do business with them, the insurance, the bonding, just the things that they need you to have. But if you do have your certifications, make sure you add those in there as well, because when all of these big government projects from federal to also the state and local dollars that we talked about, that's going to, a lot of that stimulus money is going to be trickling down through, are getting these contracts. They have small business participation goals. They have a small disadvantaged business. They have veteran-owned, woman-owned business. But on the other side of the coin, there's certifications like the DBE certification, disadvantaged business enterprise, right? And that's more on the state and local side. You know, get that certification, but don't just get the certification and think that that's your key to success, as we talked about. Go out there and however you can market to those folks or build relationships with them. And, you know, one of the things that I would encourage you to do is to really understand who the players are in your marketplace in terms of the agencies and also the large primes. And within the large primes, you can actually go to LinkedIn, look them up. Who are the people there? How can you develop relationships with some of the folks there? And you've got to decide for yourself. You've got to explore the process enough to know that, like, here is our go-to person. I can't tell you that exactly, but you're going to define an avatar. And I talk about this in some of my marketing classes, but you're going to define an avatar. So it's like, hey, this project managers at the large construction firms are the people that I need to be building relationships with, because ultimately those are the folks that maybe are making decisions on what small businesses are being utilized within the database. So if you're just registering for the database, which a lot of people do, and you're just sitting back and waiting for somebody to send you an electronic RFQ to put a bid in, you might get that, but go and build some relationships out there. And that's the key to it. So that would be my best recommendation for you as a concrete contractor. And work with multiple companies, and also look to maybe bring them in on other contracts that you might have that's a small business set aside. And again, that when we talk teaming, that's where we see a lot of small businesses bringing in larger contractors to come and help them. In fact, one thing that I will say about specialty trade contractors is that if you want to maybe go and position yourself as a general for the federal marketplace and small business set asides, well, you can get all the concrete work that you want out of that, but sometimes it allows you to control your own destiny when you have some of your own prime contracts like that. And that might not be something that everybody wants to do, but I have seen some specialty trade contractors use that strategy to get the direct prime contract. They take their specialty work and then they sub out the rest, and maybe they invite a big player to take part in it with them. And that's another really great way of building relationships, is when you're bringing folks opportunities. But always understand, too, what are their pain points with the small businesses that they're trying to find and work with. And one of the things I've heard a lot from both government and primes is that they have a hard time finding qualified contractors. Ask them, what do you need to see in a qualified contractor? And then go and develop your business to be that contractor that they tell you about. Interview them rather than try to sell them. Interview them first. Get that feedback from them. It really does a great job at building relationships instead of just, you know, throwing in capability statement at them and throwing your certifications at them like most people do. All right. I hope that answered that question in particular. Another question, would you say joining APWA is a good first start for networking? I'm not sure what that acronym is, but I would say if you've identified that that's an association where prime contractors that you want to do business with go to, I would think yes. And I will tell you this too, get out to as many of the conferences and association meetings as you can, because that gives you that face-to-face connection with folks. And that is definitely part of a defined sales process, right? How do you go out and really make the human connection with people? Yeah, American Public Works Association. I would say yes. And then I would say there's other associations for contractors like AGC. There's all kinds of small associations, and all like different corners of the United States. And then in particular for federal contracting, look up CME government contracting. And if somebody wants to post the acronym that I'm going blank on, that would be great. But SAME is another one, S-A-M-E. So anyway, I think that pretty much all the questions that we've got, again, remember, folks, something pops up in your head, join us over there at Govology Nation. Ask your question. We've got a lot of experts that can get onto the question. If we don't have a direct answer, we can always help you find one. So thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you again soon. Take care.